Campus FM jippreżenta intervista esklusiva mal-professur Edward Dabono. Presentazzjoni u produzzjoni ta' Sergio Grech.
Nsellmilkom u nilqakom għal din l-intervista esklusiva mal-professur Edward Dabono. Il-professur Dabono twilet f'Mejju tal-1933 il-Furjana u nistgħu ngħidu li kien il-bniedem li ivvinta il-ħsieb laterali. Studja fil-Kulleġġ St. Edwards u fl-Università ta' Malta minn fejn fl-1953 igradwa fix-xjenza u igradwa fil-Mediċina fl-1956. Kompla għaddej bl-istudji tiegħu fil-psikoloġija u fil-Mediċina sakemm fl-1963 ġab id-dottorat mill-Università ta' Cambridge. Għandu numru ta' pubblikazzjonijiet li nistgħu ngħidu inqalbu wkoll f'xejn inqas minn 38 lingwa internazzjonali. Ħames fakultajiet fl-Università ta' Buenos Aires illum jagħmlu użu mill-kotba li huwa ippubblika. Fil-Venezuela, it-tfal iqattaw sija fil-ġimgħa jaħdmu fuq il-programmi li huwa ippreżenta u ipproduċa. F'Singapore, 102 skejjel jagħmlu użu mix-xogħlijiet li huwa tagħna. Skejjel madwar id-dinja fl-Amerika, fil-Kanada, fl-Awstralja, fin-New Zealand, fl-Irlanda u fl-Ingilterra l-istess jagħmlu użu mill-teoriji ta' Edward Dabono. Dabono ħadem ukoll ma' diversi kumpaniji prestiġjużi fejn wassal il-ħsieb laterali u skontu dan il-ħsieb jista' jmexxi il-quddiem dawn il-kumpaniji. Fost il-kumpaniji li ħadem magħhom insibu l-IBM, DuPont, il-British Airways, il-British Coal, l-Ericsson u Siemens. Ħadem ukoll sensiela mal-BBC bl-isem ta' Course in Thinking. Fl-1993 waqqaf Malta l-Edward Dabono Foundation li hija attiva ħafna anki fil-qasam tal-pubblikazzjoni. U fl-2002 l-Università ta' Malta wafqet l-Edward Dabono Institute for Design and Development. Fl-1993 waqaf f'Malta l-Edward Dabono Foundation li hija wkoll attiva fil-qasam tal-pubblikazzjoni u fis-sena 2002 l-Università ta' Malta wafqet l-Edward Dabono Institute for Design and Development of Thinking. Fl-1994 ingħata l-Ordni tal-Mertu mir-Repubblika Maltija. Fost il-kotba li huwa ippubblika ta' min isemmi The Use of Lateral Thinking, The Mechanism of the Mind, Children Solution Problems, Opportunities, Atlas of Management Thinking, Water Logic u kif ukoll How to Have Creative Ideas 62 Exercises to Develop the Mind. L-intervista mal-professur Dabono bdejnija billi tkellimna dwar dak li hu isejjaħlu kriżi fil-ħsieb.
Well, the real issue that is we have done nothing about thinking for 2400 years since the Greek Gang of Three, who of course was Socrates, Plato, Aristotle. We've done nothing. We've been extremely complacent. We've made great progress in mathematics, yes, but in thinking we've done nothing. And it's even worse than that, because when Greek thinking came to Europe, time of the Renaissance, schools, universities, thinking were in the hands of the church. Now, the church did not need design thinking or creative thinking or even perceptual thinking. What they needed was truth, logic, and argument with which to prove heretics wrong. So we developed excellent thinking for finding the truth. Thinking for finding the truth. And that has stood us very well in science and so on. But culturally, we have never developed thinking for creating value. To be sure, individuals have, innovators, entrepreneurs, inventors, but culturally never. And that's a huge defect. So even at the highest level in politics, thinking is very poor. It's all about judgment, recognizing standard situation and judgment. And it's very poor. So the biggest problem facing the world, in my view, is not climate change or overpopulation, it's poor thinking.
In fact, I wanted to expand about this concept. In fact, even in your website, as you said, the biggest problem facing humanity is not climate change, but inadequate thinking.
Poor thinking, yes.
I think it is a huge statement.
It is, but it needs saying. Because we're so complacent, My favorite story about complacency is a fellow jumps off the top of a skyscraper to commit suicide, and as he passes the third floor window, he shouts in, he says, "So far, so good." So complacency is extremely difficult to shift. And even, I'm giving an example, in the Gaza and Israel, the Israelis say the people are firing rockets at us, they're bad people, we must bomb them. Typical political reaction, judgment followed by action. No effort to design the way forward. Now, a possible design would be that all the countries which set up Israel in the first place should pay the Palestinians a grant of $3 billion a year, but every time they fire a rocket at Israel, they lose $50 million. That changes the whole scene. In other words, design is too absent from political thinking.
But, I mean, have we lost creativity?
We haven't lost it. We never got it. We have never seriously looked at creativity, never understood creativity. We acknowledge that some people seem to be creative. We treat creativity as some magic gift. We've done virtually nothing about it.
But let's say people from the arts sector, from the philosophy sector, I mean, if we look back, there was some creativity.
No, the art sector is a different thing. The art sector and it's creativity, yes, to be sure, but I'm talking about thinking creativity. Mm-hmm. Now, interestingly, in the art sector, there are many people very interested in my work, particularly in music, very interested in my work, but that's a different thing. The art sector is to do with aesthetic judgment and so on and so on. I'm talking about thinking creativity, and say we've done virtually nothing about it. And our philosophy was a pity in a way, because people assumed philosophy was dealing with thinking. It wasn't. It was dealing with the analysis of language and so on. So we did nothing about thinking because we assumed philosophers were doing it, and they weren't. Mm. Operational thinking, not descriptive thinking. Operational thinking.
You have a hope for the future. I mean, it's
yes,
not so...
absolutely. Well, I'll give you an example. In China, in Beijing, the big university there has been doing research on my work in school for 9 years and very positive results. And people are now talking about putting it into 680,000 schools in China. There's a big project in India, put it into Indian schools. So if I get China and India thinking, the rest of the world doesn't matter.
Mm. And I'm interested in your magic wand. Allow me to use this metaphor. What exactly do you produce? You have worked with a lot of international companies,
yes.
And so on.
Yes, well, I'm teaching, not better thinking, additional thinking. You see, one of the problems in our normal dialectic habit is to say, if you want to change something, you must say, that's bad, you must change to something better. That's wrong. What we need to say is, that is excellent, but it's not enough. And I invented a word specifically to say that, E-B-N-E, Ebner. Ebner means excellent, but not enough. So you can say, what you're doing is excellent, but it's not enough. And similarly, our existing thinking is excellent, but it's not enough. So we need to add to our existing thinking, which is to do with analysis and judgment, we need to add creative and design thinking. If we take the analogy of a doctor in a clinic and a patient comes in and the doctor examines the patient, takes the history, does some tests, what's the doctor trying to do? The doctor is trying to identify, to recognize, to diagnose a standard situation for which he can then apply a standard solution. And 100% of our education is about that, and 95% of our thinking is about that. Recognize a standard situation, provide a standard answer. Well, that is excellent, but it's not enough. It doesn't make for progress.
I would like you to, for the benefit of our listeners, I know they are aware of your lateral thinking and so on, but just for those perhaps who never knew about your work, it's impossible, but I would like you to introduce in some brief words
Lateral thinking is deliberate, formal, creative thinking. Instead of creativity being just a gift, a talent, it's a skill which people can develop, practice, and use. Mm. And there are methods, techniques for use, which make a difference. For example, one afternoon in South Africa, a workshop for a steel company, using just one of my tools of lateral thinking, generated 21,000 new ideas in one afternoon. Now that's a lot of ideas in one afternoon. So it's formal, deliberate creativity, not just sitting and waiting for inspiration. It's not enough just to say, let's brainstorming, let's not judge, let's not criticize, and that's enough. That's a help, a slight help, that's all. So for the first time in human history, we can treat creative thinking as a skill, which can be used and developed and improved. And it's based on the logic of patterning systems. It's perfectly logical, and indeed some of my biggest supporters are mathematicians and physicists. For instance, the leading physicist in the world, Professor Murray Gell-Mann, who got his Nobel Prize for discovering the quark, he read my book, The Mechanism of Mind, was very interested, commissioned a team of top computer experts to simulate what I said in the book, and they said, yes, you're correct, it works exactly as you predict. And he's been a great supporter ever since. So, and it's a physicist who knows what he's talking about. Then mathematicians also support. For example, in the process of provocation, where you say something which sounds impossible, ridiculous, wrong, logicians say, that's absurd. How can you move to an idea, a place which is totally wrong, and move forward from it? That's totally contrary to any principle of logic. Mathematicians say, no, you're absolutely right. Self-organizing systems reach a stable local equilibrium, and unless you use provocation, you're never going to get the global equilibrium. In fact, mathematicians use the word annealing, because when you're making steel and you cool it down, the crystals lock in a position which is stable and not very strong. So you have to keep provoking it by heat, so they lock in a position which is stronger and stronger and stronger. So mathematicians and physicists, even though I'm talking about creativity, say, yes, we fully understand what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But logicians and philosophers simply don't.
So basically, we can learn how to think.
We can absolutely learn how to think, yes, definitely.
And it can be taught.
It can be taught. I mean, I have programs for use in schools, which are taught, and research is very powerful. Research by an organization called ATKEY in England showed that teaching my thinking as a separate subject in schools improved performance in every other subject by between 30 and 100%. Maths, physics, history, every subject improved. It can be taught. Teaching thinking to very violent youngsters at a special center in London, the Hungerford Guidance Center, which takes youngsters too violent to be taught in ordinary schools, reduced the rate of criminal conviction to one-tenth of what it had been. Teaching thinking for just 5 hours to unemployed youngsters increased the employment rate 500%, stronger than anything they'd ever done. So the answer is yes, it can be taught, and it has very powerful effects.
And I presume it is a skill that everybody can.
Everybody can learn. It's not
specifically for children or.
No. Everyone can learn it. Not everyone will be equally good. Everyone can play tennis. Not everyone's going to be a Wimbledon champion. Now it's used at the level of Down syndrome children. It's used with gifted children. It's used by Nobel laureates. Mm-hmm. So it's used right across ages, from 4-year-olds to 60-year-olds, from, as I say, mentally disadvantaged youngsters to very bright youngsters, yes.
I don't know if it is the issue of Maltese people, yes. But it seems that, unfortunately, we associate the thinking and academic performance as one and the same thing. But they are completely different.
They're completely different. And academic performance may mean that you learn what you're supposed to learn, and you can repeat it or regurgitate it when asked in an exam, and that's fine. I mean, that is a skill, it's of use, but that's not the same as individual thinking, no.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, your concepts, your philosophy, your system is not there to improve one's performance academic-wise. I mean, it's more open.
No, it, not only to do that. It does that
it helps,
as well.
Of course.
It does that as well, but that's not the purpose of it. No, the purpose of it is thinking. For getting on with your life, improving your life, improving the world, yes.
By improving the world, you mean, of course, from cultural point of view, business point of view.
Well, I'm mentioning the unemployed and violent youngsters, yes. Mm.
You tried, I read in your website, to create a creative group within the United Nations, but it seems that it failed. Why? Actually?
Well, basically, and I was helped by the Malta representative at that time, Borja Olivier, and we had meetings, and Kofi Annan, who was Secretary General, was at one of the meetings. What it came down to the end is they said, we're not here to think, we're here to represent our countries, not to think. And that's understandable, because if they came up with creative ideas which their country didn't know about or didn't approve, then that's not much use. So it's a representative body, not a thinking body. So there's a need for somewhere in the world, a place which would be there to suggest new ideas, new thinking. That's not going to happen in the United Nations. So my project is to set up a palace of thinking somewhere, and Malta's a possibility. The palace of thinking would have two functions. One is a platform to receive ideas from anywhere in the world, and to promote and publicize the best ones. The second would be to organize and act as host for specific conferences and task forces, creative conferences, on issues, problems, whether it's migration or drugs or anything else, and make the results visible. So to make visible around the world possibilities, options, new ideas. And so that's the purpose of the Palace of Thinking. So it'd be the one place in the world which is specifically organized to put forward new ideas. Yes.
If we go back to the United Nations,
yes.
Were you convinced with their answer? I mean, because they need to think.
They need to, but it's...
Before they devise policy, I mean.
But it is this conflict between representing and individual thinking. If you're representing your country, you want to put forward what the official policy of your country is. Yes. So it's very difficult to say, yes, but I have a better idea myself. It's very difficult.
Mm-hmm. What were the reactions from the Maltese side for the Palace of Thought?
I've had two meetings with the Prime Minister, Gonzi, and he's in favor of the idea, but it's a matter of moving from being in favor to action.
To action.
Yes.
You don't seem much convinced, actually, about the politicians. In fact, you mentioned in your website that you want to launch a party, the TOPP, was it called? But why?
Well, you see, let's put it this way. Politicians are very conscious of existing because they satisfy the public. Now, if an issue does not have at least to begin with, does not have a big public dimension, politicians are not very interested. Mm. Now, on the other hand, if they knew what was going on, there's good research around the world showing that if a country becomes visible internationally, that affects inward investments, trade, tourism, everything is very positively affected. Mm. So if Malta became known as the host of the Palace of Thinking, and on every news bulletin there would be reports of the thinking from this palace, that would have a very positive effect economically, financially on Malta. But you have to understand that, which most of them don't.
But I think we agree on this principle that there are some politicians actually who are genuine and who try to do their utmost for the benefit of humanity, not only in Malta, I mean all over the world.
Yes, there are, but still, they still play according to the rules of where they are. And that's the same within organizations. Within organizations, the brain is very good at learning the patterns, the routines of that organization. The values, the idiom, the culture, and so on. So the most effective executives are the best ones who learn to play the game of that organization. So at the same time, to ask these people to think differently is impossible. So people who are very good at playing the existing game aren't there to change the game. So similarly with politicians, they learn the game of politics and they play it very well. But that's not going to give you new ideas.
Is it an issue of votes and getting...
It's what you see as the game. And if the game is to get votes, to get support, to get elected, then clearly you are interested in those issues which affect people. And something like the Palace of Thinking doesn't affect people directly. Indirectly, yes, and long-term, and understanding it, yes, but not at the moment. So it's difficult for politicians to understand these things.
What is your position about the Catholic Church, you know,
well,
in this process?
Well, the Church has always been interested in my work and thinking. In fact, even totalitarian regimes in the old days in the Soviet Union, I used to be invited by the Academy of Science to Moscow, they're very interested in it. And many people in the Church and different religions say, yes, we're all in favor of thinking. Thinking is not against religion at all.
Mm. But is there space for faith and religion
in your model,
I mean?
Yes, religion is a set of values and beliefs, and fine. And thinking is how you make use of these in your own life and move forward, yes. Mm. There's no contradiction between thinking and religion.
What do you think about the state of the Church of Malta? Some argue that it is a close-knit society.
I really haven't analyzed that, so I'm not in a position to make judgments about that.
On your website on 3rd January, you wrote, imprisoned by a web of concepts and perceptions. Can you elaborate?
Well, I mean, as we go through life, we pick up perceptions and they get fixed, and then we have certain concepts like justice and so on. And once we have these around in our mind, it's sometimes very difficult to make any change. Because it's like someone being tied down by lots of strings and you can't move. It doesn't mean these things are wrong or bad. It simply means that the way we go through life, we set up routines which enable us to act quickly and effectively in the normal way and make change more and more difficult.
Was change important in your case? What role did change play?
Well, I started off as a medical doctor, and I'm doing something rather different now.
I always wonder why there are no Edward de Bono books in Maltese.
Well, it's a matter of, first of all, it's assumed that many people in Malta who'd be interested in the subject can read in English or Italian or French. The books are translated into 43 languages, so that covers most languages in the world. Now, if a publisher wants to publish them in Maltese, I'm sure that can be arranged very simply.
How do you feel about all these books, I mean, all these translations?
Well, I think it's interesting that people in different parts of the world, whether it's Korea or Argentina and so on, know my work and are interested in it, and they realize that for the first time in 2,400 years, someone's doing something about operational thinking.
We are living in this age of e-books.
Yes.
Are you interested also to enter in this
yes,
field?
Yes, oh yes, that's something I have in mind, yes.
But what about the competition with the traditional book? I mean, because there are a lot who argue that one day...
Well, it's possible that traditional books will be less as we know them today. But there still will be, shall we say, delivery. You could have e-books and you could have a machine, and you go to the machine and you type in what you want, and the machine will print out the book you want, which you take off and read on the beach. So the two are not completely against each other.
I'm interested in the process of writing. I mean,
yeah.
How do you write on paper, on the computer?
I sit down and write.
Are there any particular times?
No, I only write in the morning. I never write in the afternoon or evening in general. And when I first started writing, I tried three approaches. One was longhand, one was typing, a computer typewriter, and the other was dictating. Dictating is much too fast. The style is terrible. Longhand, the style may be better, but the flow of thoughts is too slow. So in the end, I type on a computer, yes.
Are you fast in your thoughts? How do you control it?
Very fast. I mean, I could write a book in a week easily, yes. But it's a matter of discipline, just sitting down and writing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You also invented two games, the L game and the three-spot game, right?
Yes.
I would like you to speak about it's interesting.
Well, the L game is possibly the simplest game ever invented, and it's played on a 4x4 board with two L-shaped pieces and two single pieces, and you've got to block the other person from moving. There's something like 21,000 different moves, and it's very, very simple to play, possibly the simplest real game ever invented. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What's its outcome? Are these games to help us to think better? I mean,
No, they're just games for enjoying.
Just for fun.
Enjoying, yes.
I
also invented, I haven't yet published, a new game of chess, totally new game of chess, played on the same board with the same pieces, but in a totally different way, which is much more interesting, much faster, but I'll publish that someday.
Okay. What do you think of Malta in 2011? What does Malta mean for you, I mean?
Malta is my place I was born, place I belong to. I think it has a unique position in the world. I think one of the sad things, in my view, about Malta is you'd think that in a rather small island, people would be on the seashore looking at the big world, wanting to get involved in the big world. Too often it seems they're on the seashore looking inwards, attacking each other, worried about people getting better than them, a lot of jealousies and infighting. That's a pity, I think. That's natural in a small place.
Mm-hmm. Do you come here frequently? I mean, do you miss Malta when you are abroad? Or
technically, I'm resident here. I don't spend all that much time here, but technically I'm resident here, yes. And I tell people it's the oldest civilization in the world, and that for us the pyramids in Egypt are modern architecture.
Something interesting that I wrote on your website, you said, in some city I visited some months ago, I was told that the prostitutes no longer offered sex, but listening to their clients.
Yes.
This seemed an excellent idea, you said.
Yes, I think it is. I think it may have been either Budapest or Bucharest, I'm not sure. But it seemed an excellent idea, yes. To have someone paid to listen to you, but not the same as a psychologist and so on. Because when you go to a psychologist, you're going like a student to a teacher. And so the psychologist listens to you and sort of tells you what you should do, what you should not do. If you go to a prostitute, that's sort of inferior in a sense, at least not superior, not say inferior, not superior, and you're talking to them, and they listen, they have to listen, because you're paying them to listen, and they can offer points of view, or ask questions, or bring it out. So there is, I think, a real role for paid listeners, yes. They don't have to be prostitutes, but paid listeners, yes.
But I mean, is this process part of this crisis in our thinking? I don't know, we don't find time to listen to our...
It's the ability to have someone who's willing to listen to you, and you make an effort to explain yourself, and maybe the person can ask questions like, how did that happen, or why do you think this, maybe, but not in a sense of a teacher to a pupil, which is a normal psychology approach.
How do you envisage the future of humanity? I mean, where is the world going? I mean,
I think we need, for instance, every school should have thinking as a separate subject. I think universities should have faculties of thinking. I think the government should have ministers of thinking. I think we should pay far more attention to thinking and at possibilities and ideas. For instance, I'll give you another example. In science, scientists are taught to stick to the most reasonable hypothesis and so on. Now, this was natural because science came after witchcraft, and witchcraft, everything was possible. So science was taught, no, we're not dealing with possibilities anymore, we're teaching with reasonable hypothesis and so on. And that is very, very limiting in science. I'll give you an example. A medical condition called peptic ulcer, stomach ulcer, duodenal ulcer, and the people with this condition had a miserable life. They had to be on a diet, they had to be on antacids for 20, 50 years. Sometimes they had their stomach removed. It was a pretty awful life. Then a young doctor in West Australia, I think his name was J.B. Marshall, I'm not sure, said maybe a peptic ulcer is an infection. Everyone roared with laughter and said, don't be stupid, a strong acid in the stomach would kill any bacteria. Anyway, eventually he proved his point. Today, instead of 20 or 50 years on antacids or losing your stomach, you take antibiotics for 1 week. Huge change in medicine, because he thought of possibilities. And scientists should be encouraged to think of possibilities. Doesn't mean you believe in the possibilities, but they are directions in which to look. Whereas the normal approach of science is no, there are no fancy stuff, no possibilities, it's just what is the most reasonable hypothesis. And I'm sure that limits progress in science very much.
U b'dak il-sieb aħna naslu fit-tmiem ta' din l-intervista esklusiva nirringrazzja lil Daniela Bartoli li nistgħu ngħidu kienet il-kuntatt biex din l-intervista stajna nagħmluha. Grazzi wkoll lilkom is-semgħa ta' Campus FM li segwejtuna. Jina Sergio Grech nsellimkom.
Smajtu intervista esklusiva mal-professur Edward Debono. Presentazioni u produzzjoni ta' Sergio Grech.